This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
Hi, this is Marina Sirtis, Deanna Troi from Star Trek The Next Generation. You're listening to Trek FM.
T.L. Greyhawk.
Welcome to another cup of Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to the next generation. I'm your host, Justin Ozer, and join with me today are the incalculably amazing Amy and the impressively incredible Richard. Amy, how are you doing?
Wow, that's a lot of eyes in there. That's pretty awesome. I'm doing great, enjoying my summer. School is out, so I don't have to be so calculating now. It's my summer break.
Excellent. Well, surely you think about math during the summer too.
Oh, yes, I do. It's nonstop, you guys. It's a curse, really, and a blessing.
Like, forget this. I'm on vacation.
Yep.
And Richard, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good today. Just not enjoying the summer like Amy does, but close enough, I guess.
Yeah, time off from work during the summer? What's that?
I know, right? What is that?
It's 2 months of bliss, you guys. Let me tell y'all about it.
Okay, maybe another time so we don't feel too jealous. Well, before we get started, we have some Babel Conference feedback, this time from episode 229, where we talked about the wounded. Amy, do you want to read the first comment?
Yeah. Brandon Shamutella says, thanks so much, Richard Marquez, for opening up this episode. It was very brave of you and a difficult thing to do. Yep, it was really good. And your comments were just so pertinent and really led to a great discussion.
Yeah, and maybe we didn't say it enough on the episode, but thank you so much for sharing about your experience. And thank you for your service and all that you've done. So very much appreciated. And we got other comments like this in the Babel Conference as well, really appreciating what you had to say in that episode.
Yeah, it definitely was a difficult thing to talk about. It's something that I don't typically talk about, obviously, because of the sensitivity of the actual issue. But yeah, for sure, it's not something I like talking about. But like, yeah.
It's important, though, to discuss.
Yeah, I didn't even know there was any comments really going on right now, because I was really avoiding the Babel Conference, because I had a feeling there was going to be a couple of them. And then Brandon was sent me a message, and you know, and basically verbatim what he said. And I'm like, oh, so I guess I'll just take a look at it. And, you know, it was nice to see that. So, yeah.
Well, and Chris Hill said, another great episode. I'm right there with Richard and O'Brien. It has given me a thought about another podcast where those like myself, Richard, and Ken Tripp over on Standard Orbit talk about Trek and how it relates to / helped us get through our service. So thanks, Chris, for that comment.
I don't think I discussed I have seasons 5 through 7 of Deep Space. No, 4 through 7. And then seasons 5 and 6 for Next Generation. I'm sorry. Why did I say 7? Anyway, so
are those the ones you have on like Blu-ray or?
Actually, it was DVD at that time.
DVD.
Yeah, it would have to be.
Oh,
DVD.
Yeah, back then. Sorry, back then.
Yeah. So like, yeah. I used to watch all of those, and then Voyager 2. I think I had like 3, 4, and 6 or something like that. It was whatever was available at the PX. They didn't have really online ordering at that time. But like, yeah, I used to watch those all the time, and yeah, they did get me through some tough times on certain episodes that were there in those seasons. So yeah, for sure. Yeah. So Matt DT said, one of the best episodes of the series, in my humble opinion, excellent plot, and I love seeing other Federation ships. It's so rare in the series due to the model costs. Absolutely. And it's and if it was cheaper, I bet you we would have saw a lot more.
Yeah.
Well, you end up seeing a lot of... Well, yeah, I think what's interesting, I think they did introduce like a new ship for this, and that was rare for the Next Generation. So you get more of that maybe later in Deep Space Nine, but they still reuse a lot of ships. But yeah, it's definitely, I mean, as you heard in our discussion, amazing episode and so many great things about it.
Yeah, Wes Huntington says, when you talk about O'Brien in this episode, some of the things he says about the Cardassians are the same thing in DS9. And then there are times when he flat out hates the Cardassians. One line from DS9 stands out as his hatred of the race. Quote, "Gentle was bred out these people a long time ago," end quote. Keiko immediately says, "You know, that was a very ugly thing you said. It contrasts with this episode quite nicely. I would give the episode Cardassians, where the line I mentioned was said, contrasting to this introductory episode, and it was a nice way that given time, your opinions can change for the better or for the worse."
You know, that's funny. I actually just watched this episode not too long ago, and I forgot about that line that Keiko said that. Wasn't that season two? That's season two, isn't it?
I'm looking it up. Yeah, that was early season two. So really only like, what, a year, year and a half after The Wounded. So, yeah, and I don't know if it's just, I mean, we talked about it a little bit, but I don't know if it's in DS9 he just had more interaction with the Cardassians and seeing more of how they could be and not liking what they had done to the Bajorans and all of that. But yeah, I think it stands out much, much stronger. And that's why I was trying to qualify things a little bit. Like in this Next Generation episode, this seems to be where he's at. But maybe he changed a little bit later, or maybe it was always there and he was hiding it. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and your experiences are going to influence your opinions. So
maybe it's because he just hated trying to fix this broken down Cardassian station. So
yeah, it was always breaking down.
Yeah. It was like, ah, these Cardassians. Gentle was bred out of their stations. I don't know. It's not to make too much light of it, but yeah, it is interesting how he changes because he has to spend so much more time around them, or maybe it comes out more. Yeah. So thank you everyone for your Babel Conference feedback. This week, with Father's Day in the U.S. coming up the Sunday after this episode comes out, we are going to talk about the fathers of TNG. You might remember last month we talked about the mothers of TNG, and this time we're talking about the fathers. We have a whole list. Hope we've gotten the ones that listeners are thinking about, but you'll have to let us know if there's some that we didn't get. Let's start out through the list. So first up, we have Will Riker's father, Kyle Riker, who basically has a whole episode, The Icarus Factor, where he comes by. He's supposed to give this briefing to Riker about his new mission, but really he wants to reconnect with him, and they have it out in the Ambojitsu ring at the end. I think there's a lot more that goes on. But like, what do you guys think about like Kyle Riker as a father? He's been kind of away or absent. They've had this kind of frosty relationship for a while, but it does seem like he's trying to make some sort of effort to reconnect. Richard, what do you think?
I actually like Kyle Riker. I mean, he strikes me as a person that does tough love. I guess, you know, like giving him the proper education to the point where, you know, he's going to throw them out there into the wolves and basically say, "You figure it out," sort of thing. And I mean, granted, obviously we don't actually see when Riker was a kid or you know, really what actually happened between the two. I mean, given that, you know, his mother died and, you know, basically it was up to him. I mean, it's difficult enough to do it as one parent, I mean, as is. And then on top of that, I don't know what career he had. And then, of course, Alaska as well. So I really like him mainly because he's one of those parents that are like tough love, you know, we can only make do with what we have. And, you know, I'm only one person. So, you know, that's how I see him. I mean, yeah.
I'm going to say not father of the year material. I have issues with Kyle because I don't want to sound too harsh, so I won't. I'll preface it. he definitely goes through a difficult time losing his wife. And you can assume that him and his wife have not been together that long. You know, he was assuming that he was going to spend the rest of his life with his lovely bride. And, you know, she was killed, or she died. And that affects him so much so, where I think I see it that he is so overcome with grief and he doesn't reach out to Riker enough. And so then this rift comes between them. And I'm just like, dude, you're a parent and there's times where you need to suck it up and not be selfish. And you can't let that event ruin your child. You know, if it's going to ruin you, you have to have that separate and you still have to continue and be this father for your son. And this lack of communication that they have lasts for so long. I will give him credit that, yes, he does come back and he does want to have a better relationship. So kudos for that, that it only took him, you know, 20 years to figure that out. But I just see it as being so selfish when he's got this son that needs him so desperately and he just shut him out of his life.
All right. Go ahead, Richard, if you have something.
Well, I was just going to add on to that. You know, it's really, I mean, I guess I could say the same thing, what William Riker went through in his childhood as well. You know, I mean, I didn't lose my mom. My mom's not obviously dead. But it certainly felt like it when my parents got divorced when I was it was four. And, you know, if I can, I mean... I guess I feel the same way when it comes to like being abandoned and not feeling that center of attention or at least, you know, that kind of like growing up with a father that actually will teach and do everything. Cause there was a point in time where, I wasn't the model, you know, son either when it came to growing up, but at the same time, you know, I blamed him for a lot of things and, you know, it got to the point where it was like, you know, I don't think it really hit home until I became a parent and started realizing like, oh no, maybe I shouldn't have said that to my dad sort mm-hmm. of thing. And I understand that now I do. And it's really difficult. I mean, it's even, I can only imagine, I mean, I have Jennifer, I have my Eva's a mom as well, and we've got all kinds of support, and you know, it's somewhat easier. By all means, parenting is not easy by any stretch of the imagination whatsoever. But like I can only imagine being a single parent doing that all by yourself. Again, we don't know what kind of support he had, so I mean, all we knew is that Riker's mom died when he was two. So that's all we really know about her. So, yeah.
Right. Well, we do know that he got involved with Pulaski at some point, right? Find out in this episode.
Yes, he did.
A little awkward. It seems like Riker did not know about that.
So Kyle is obviously living his life.
Yeah. Yeah. It's.
I think, again, just showing how selfish he is and not reaching out to
not only
Will.
Pulaski, but he seemed to have lots of other friends in the room. People like, hey, Kyle, how's it going? Oh, yeah. And he's done all this work, I guess, as this civilian strategist, and a lot of people have gotten to know him, but he hasn't gotten to know his son. Let me say a couple of things. I don't often get into the personal details of my life, but I've had this on and off again relationship with my dad for a lot of my life. He's felt kind of distant at some points and not really kind of engaging with me because of some other things going on in his life. I've had periods of time like the last couple of years where I haven't really talked to him. We've gotten in some big disagreements. So there's something about this whole like Kyle Riker, Will Riker situation that I can really relate to, and how, you know, Kyle Riker comes aboard and he's like, hey, how's it going? And Riker's like, okay, I haven't seen you for like 15 years. Please escort this gentleman over to his quarters, you know, like keeping it very formal. And so I think I can relate to that, because I think Will feels like he wasn't there for him. And it's like, okay, you're coming now. And I've done fine on my own for like the last 15 years, right? I haven't really needed you for anything. So why are you coming here now? And he's doing it under this kind of deception where it's like, oh, I'm here to give you your mission orders. Okay, tell me about it. Well, it's all in this little chip here. He's like, so why are you here? And he's like, well, I wanted to get to know you, son. And it's like, okay, feels a little, too late. I mean, at the same time, I can feel for someone like Kyle Riker, for whom it seems like it's hard for him to really like open up. And he probably often has this kind of, you know, tough or distant facade, possibly because of the experience that he went through. For my own dad, it's not the same thing. You know, my mom didn't die, you know, a long time ago. But people go through experiences of different kinds that can be traumatic and turn them into something different, and it can affect their relationships with their children. So I can understand it from that perspective, but I can also understand it from Will's perspective, where it's like, why do I even need you in my life? I've been just fine. You didn't make the effort. You're coming by under, you know, this kind of subterfuge. And like, what's going on here? I think it is interesting that they decide to kind of have it out in this Ambo Jitsu ring. And at the end of it, it's Kyle's like, I love you. And was like, I love you too. Glad you came here. And it's like, really? Is it that easy? I don't know. It seemed like, and you have, you know, this scene with Pulaski and Troy that are like, God, these men and their barbaric sports to work things out. It seems like a little odd for the episode, but I can very much relate to what's going on and kind of see it a little bit from both sides. And I think it can be a tough situation, because like as a child growing up, if you feel like your parents didn't like pay a certain amount of attention to you or understand you in a certain way, it's hard to get that back later. It's really hard, you know, and I felt that myself. Yeah.
Well, that was pretty serious.
Sorry. I just felt like I also I think that, yeah, I know that's serious. I don't often get personal on Earl Grey, but I felt like I related a lot to this situation. And, you know, we don't really see Kyle again. It's just in this particular circumstance. I mean, what do you guys think happens after this? Like, is it still just kind of maybe they'll see each other every 15 years, or does something important happen here?
You know, it would have been great if we saw Kyle at the wedding.
Oh, in Nemesis. But we didn't. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think, and it's funny you bring up their little, you know, fight in the Ambo Jitsu and now everything's all kumbaya. But it's funny because as a teacher, like I see, you know, when, and sorry to sound so stereotypical, but it does happen a lot. I've seen it with much frequency where, you know, two girlfriends get in a fight and it lasts for weeks and months. And I'm noticing the interactions even within the classroom. And I'm like, we're here to do math and you guys are worried about this little tiff that you have. And, you know, and then with like two boy friends, you know, they're like upset for a day and then they have it out. And unfortunately, when I was at a different school, you know, there'd be a fight in the quad area or whatever. And then like the next week they're all fine and there's no really major issue. And I'm like, I thought you guys hated each other, but like they just work it out, throw a few punches and then we're good.
By the way, we're not recommending this method for either friendships or parenting relationships.
Yes, let's be clear. Yeah, I'm not saying one's better or whatever, but I have seen that pattern. Yes, I've seen it happen, and that they show that on the show, you know, just sort of this stereotypical, if you will, of, oh, we're going to have a fight and now everything's all better, you know. So I do like to think that Kyle and Will are on better footing. I think that because, like you said, Richard, like Will is who he is. I think, well, he is who he is because of how his father, you know, treated him and their relationship. Like Will has made the best of that situation and he is very self-sufficient. He doesn't need his father, but there maybe is a need in a different way of having, you know, a familial relationship, because we don't really see him have much other family outside of his father.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I know my daughter's only eight, but like, I've been reading a lot about, one of the biggest problems that a lot of people have is, when their kids get older, is that transition going from parent to, I guess, parent friend. And, mm-hmm. you know, you don't obviously want to be their friend, drinking buddy or whatever, you know, or at least I don't, but like,
when they're not as dependent on you, right?
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, to get that adult
right.
parent-child relationship instead of the parent.
Yeah, and then a lot of parents forget to let go, and you know they the kid might have let go, but the parent never got to, or mm-hmm. what, or vice versa. I mean, I don't know, but I mean, it's something I've been reading lately. Is that, you know, a lot of parents do have a problem with transitioning from going from parent to friend or not parent. But like, yeah, I mean, maybe that's ultimately what's going on, that, you know, Riker wasn't able to let go of his father, and his father was, and he thought he was ready at, like, I don't know, probably 15 or 16 or 15. Something like that.
Well, and I relate to that a lot too, because I was basically on my own from the time I went to college at 17, almost 18. So it's like, what do I need you for? Yeah, it's mm-hmm. I think it's a really tough thing. And I think, despite some of the flaws in the episode, I think it's really good in just portraying some of this difficult relationship, even though working it out is a little too easy. Shall we talk about the next one?
I think we should.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Data and him being a father to Lal in the episode The Offspring. Always just makes me sad to think about. But let's talk about it anyway.
I know.
So, Amy, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, this is an amazing episode. And one thing I want to point out with Data is that he has a desire to be a father. And I think so many times, in many different situations, you don't want, or we see characters that don't want to be fathers, and oops, I'm a father, you know, type of situation. And here we have Data specifically doing the research and building this positronic net to...
But let's pause for a minute to think, like, how unusual of a parent-child relationship that is. He's like building her like from scratch.
Yeah. You know, and so the intention is fully there, and how being a father starts at that creation moment with that desire to be a father. I think that's very well highlighted in this episode.
Yeah. I wish all fathers were like that, and it didn't happen to be oops, you know, sort of thing. And
as we'll see.
Well, or what can happen sometimes also is that they're two people, and one of them wants to have a child, the other's kind of like, and gets kind of maybe pushed into it a little bit and doesn't want it mm-hmm. as much. But Data has this complete desire, like, it seems possible that I can create something of myself to continue. And he actually, you know, puts in his own pathways into her. So really, it's very much like that kind of parent-child relationship where it's, you know, part you. So mm-hmm. yeah, I think that's, it's really great that it's so intentional. At the same time, Picard gets upset about it. Like, why did you tell me about this? And that no other parent on the ship has to deal with.
Yeah.
I mean, would you tell that to another crew member that's human?
That's Data's point. Like, I didn't realize you had to, you know, approve all the procreation.
Get approval
on the ship.
For procreation. Yeah. Yeah.
Although Picard does become really his advocate later on, but. But yeah, I mean, like, in watching the episode, I mean, it's, you see him be so patient, like, Lal, this is a painting, and Lal, this is a chair, and oh, you know, let me help you with that. You're having trouble drinking from a glass and you're spilling it. He is just so incredibly, like, patient and helping her at every single turn that it's so wonderful to see. And that's what makes it all the more heartbreaking when, you know, she dies in the end. But, you know, possibly out of anybody on this list, it seems like he's just the the most intentional about it and the like the most patient and kind of kind and loving in this whole situation.
Well, and I think like he, I guess, is drawing from his own personal experience and remembers it so well that, yeah, he's walking Lal through each of these steps.
But he actually doesn't remember a lot of that, right? They wiped his memory up to the point that he was found. So he doesn't remember actually kind of growing up.
But he knows how she processes information.
True. Yeah.
You know, which I think might be a slight advantage because when you have children, you know, they
they don't have the same brain pathways.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You know, so Data definitely is the perfect father for Lal, you know, because of that. And, you know, I love that he allows her the experiences and the freedom to choose, you know, say, for example, her own sex, that she wants to be female instead
and
of male.
Appearance.
And yeah, and appearance and everything like that. Like that is, you know, just so awesome for him to even say, because so many times parents are like, well, you're going to do it this way. I have these expectations of you, you know, which sometimes can hurt a parent-child relationship. But Data just goes at it and says, this is your life. I will support you. I will help you learn. I will be there for you. But you make the choice for you. And that's what a great example.
And even, you know, works her through some really difficult things, like when the children are laughing at some of the things that she's doing in school, and he has to explain, like, no, that's not good. They're laughing at you. It's like, oh, why would they do that? And he really explains it. He's not going to, like, sugarcoat things and say, oh, no, you know, they thought you were hilarious. You know, he's going to say, I'm sorry, but they're being a little mean to you, and here's why that happens. So, yeah, it is really great to see.
Speaking of children, I got my dog right here in my lap.
That's another episode, Pets of the Next Generation. But I like also that Data is like seeking advice. I think he's seeking Dr. Crusher's advice about being a parent, and he's read all of this stuff from all of these different cultures. He's trying to be like so prepared. He's like the perfect student of parenting, or he's trying to be, you know.
Yeah,
like his intention to be a father is just so good.
It's what we strive to be.
So Zach Moore makes fun of me a little bit, but there is a novel that follows up on this episode. So a couple of novels,
which
actually.
One?
Well, probably the ones that most directly are the Cold Equations trilogy that David Mack wrote. I don't want to give too much away, but it is a follow up and it's pretty amazing. This is not the end of the story, at least in the novels. So, but I also wonder, like, if she hadn't died in this episode, if she had gone on or maybe had some difficulty, what would have been like going forward for her to be on the ship and for him to be like a parent? What, have you guys thought about what that would have been like? No.
No. And I wonder, would she go into Starfleet, you know, sort of going back to that idea of expectations? Like, would that be the expectations that she would have? Or, you know, what could be her experiences in learning about life on a starship? Like, it's a sort of a closed bottle, if you will.
Yeah. Well, she might be like an unruly teenager too, just disobeying all his, everything he has to say. Yeah. It would have been interesting because from that, you could probably see like some of the struggles Data might've had in growing up, but.
Well, I don't know. If she started disobeying, he'd just download a subroutine of you must follow my directions at all time. You know, that'd be pretty cool as a parent.
Maybe, or maybe he would think it's a natural part of her development that she has to experience and he can't just cover it over. So anyway, it was just something I thought about when I was watching the episode. Well, let's talk about more of Data's family, Noonien Soong, Data's father, who we see in the episode Brothers, and we also see him as a hologram in Birthright Part 1 and Inheritance. So maybe we'll focus mostly on Brothers, but like, what do you think of Noonien Soong as a father, Richard? And I guess it could apply to Data and Lore.
And I don't know. I mean, maybe. There's not really much information, you know, like there's not really much. We learn more about what was the mother's name? The android.
Juliana Tainer.
Yeah, there you go. We learn probably more about him back there. But like, it's just there's not much information to go off of, especially when we do like Brothers. I mean, obviously he recalls him for the emotion chip, And then funny enough, Lore, you know, he didn't realize he was put back together. But
it's not just the emotion chip, though. I think he calls him back because he knows he's dying as well.
Well, mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, really, we don't really see much of him being a parent. It's more like, hey, I'm saying my last goodbyes to you. Here's my last gift to you. And, you know, it's kind of hard to, you know, really say that if he's a good father or not, because he was pre-programmed.
Well, however, all this time Data didn't know that he survived, right?
True.
Up to this point, because we don't see Juliana Tainer inheritance till later and find out more of like what happened that he was left behind. But like, what does it say about him as a father that he escaped from this planet? He's been following his Starfleet career and did not bother to get in contact with him this whole time.
Ooh.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, it's been like 25 years or something like that.
I don't know. I still think that it's a little different because, you know, he basically built Data and really there's not much.
Well, but Data built Lal and he's very much a father to her. So yeah. Is it different?
Well, and that's sort of what I was thinking along the lines with you, Richard, that it's like, you know, albeit a creation, you know, is it this father, if you will.
But all parents do create their children through, you know, a more like natural process. But
I would say him serving in the Federation and or in Starfleet and then, you know, having that interaction, that would be more of a father figure to him. I mean, you could say that he's a absent father, not by choice because he had to leave. I mean, it wasn't necessarily his fault, but then again, if he thought he was already dead, then and he's recorded as dead, maybe he's running from the law. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Maybe he's on the run. I don't know. I mean, as we saw in Enterprise, I mean, he's not really a good person. Really,
his ancestor. Like, we're not talking about Noonien there.
Yeah, but like, I mean, you know what I mean. I'm just saying, like, that's the reason why. I mean, there's probably another alternative motive why he's laying low.
I could see that, but I mean, I think it does reveal some things about him. Like in Brothers, Soong is kind of, I think Data is asking like, why did you create me? And kind of step by step, in a way, like what Data does for Lal. He just walks him through it like, okay, why do people care about things in the past? Why is it so important? Okay, why is it so important to have this sense of continuity and to continue? So he kind of walks him through like why it's important that he was created and why he did that, which I like, you know, quite a bit. It is, I mean, maybe there is something else, like he's running from the law or something and he can't contact him until he's dying. But I think... You know, the other thing with him as a parent is Lore comes in that episode and he didn't realize that Lore was still alive somewhere, right? But Lore has all of this mm-hmm. resentment, but he does try to like calm him down. And I mean, Noonien Soong seems to be the only person that even for any short span of time can deal reasonably with Lore. So I think that says something about him. And also like, you know, one of the other places we see Noonien Soong, it was, you know, as part of a dream sequence really is in Birthright Part One. And I love those parts because Data has unlocked this part of himself that Noonien Soong had put in there. And I just think it's great that he was thinking ahead to that, like some kind of expanded experience that has nothing really to do with his specifically like surviving or his duties or anything like that, but a form of creative expression for him. So we do just see little bits, but I like some of the things that he's doing for Data to set him up. But I guess it's a little hard to judge him as mm-hmm. as a father though, because it is an unusual relationship, even more unusual than Data and Lal, because Data has this has like laid down all of these pathways and things like that, and it's a little hard to judge.
Yeah,
but I think he has his good points and other things where it's not quite explained, like why he's absent for so long.
Maybe, I don't know.
All right. So should we talk about the next one?
Yes, we should.
Let us talk about Worf as a father.
Yes.
Amy, what do you think about Worf as a father? I know a lot of people say he's a terrible father, maybe the worst father, but what do you think?
Yeah, he's not a good father. I struggle because you know, when you think about Klingons and tradition and, you know, shaming the family for seven generations, like this whole idea of tradition and building family is so important and inherent in the culture. And then we have Worf that just isn't even going to put forth an effort. And that's maybe a little too harsh, because I would like to believe that Worf is doing the best he can. And you want to have that assumption with everyone that, yes, is this the best that he can be? Very taken off guard. He did not know that he was a father, had this kid dropped off. I just would have liked to have seen him take a more active role and try a little bit harder, but maybe he just couldn't. So I'd like to give him the benefit of the doubt, but his actions and how he dismisses Alexander almost at every turn and tries to slough him off and is very difficult, that he's not dealing with his behavior and his actions as a father. I don't know. It's just tough. Okay. What do you think, Richard?
All right, here we go. No, I'm just kidding. So Worf reminds me of me as a father. He really does. Not saying that I would abandon my daughter or anything like that, but I'm just saying, like, I've said it before, he's a person of what with lots of discipline, and he's a workaholic. He knows he does what he does, which is security, very well. And I think that part of the reason, you know, the way I'm thinking is that, you know, he's afraid of being a father. Probably something that he doesn't quite fully understand. And I sympathize with that, because I didn't know how to be. I have all these figures, you know, people in my life, my own dad, you know, several other people that are very good fathers. And, you know, which do I want to be? Do I want to be that stern and strict father, or do I want to be that tough love father, or do I want to be, the very gentle, giant or something like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's a balance of all three. I mean, it's very difficult to figure that out. And then of course every child's different, and, you know, then later on down the road, you have the issue of playing favorites and all that, but yeah, well, that's another whole issue. But like, I sympathize with them. I mean, when it comes to like how he treats Alexander, when you have two people that are the same thing, especially when it comes to a child, and they're basically the spitting image of you, it's very difficult to deal with that, because you know how it works for you. That may not be the case with Alexander and whatnot. So, I mean, trying to find that balance is the worst thing. It's the most challenging part of being a father. And for sure, you know, Alexander pushes back, being that rebel. I mean, at that young age, or whatever age he is, like, what, 9 or 10 or something like that.
Klingon years are different than human years.
Yeah, well, exactly. So, it's very difficult to go through that. And I sympathize for Worf. Now, as him being a good father, shipping him off to basically military school or boarding school is not really my definition of a good father, because that's basically avoiding the situation. To me, you know, you need to ramp down your own life. I mean,
well, he's threatening to do that, but he doesn't actually send him off.
He should
do that at this point.
Yeah, but he should. Yeah, well, I mean, it's that clear avoiding the whole being a father. And I really think, like I said, you know, I've always said it before too, it was a great opportunity for him to become a father, and they really didn't do that in Deep Space Nine. I mean, well, you saw him like later on the ship called the IKS Martok's ship.
I'm not remembering the name now.
I can't remember the name.
But yeah, in Deep Space Nine, he does end up joining the Klingon Defense Forces anyway, and he's a bit of a laughingstock, which is a shame.
Clumsy. Yeah, it is a shame.
It is.
But I haven't watched that episode for a while, but I think at the end it's like, oh, well, that's my purpose. Bye. It's like, whoa, okay.
And I kind of like the relationship that they had in Deep Space Nine after he, you know, came to grips or came to accept that his son is a klutz, basically. I mean, and I really like that. I really wish they would have done something like that in TNG to
had him be a klutz.
Okay. Well, not, maybe not that, but like something where he accepted him. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, that he accepts, you know, Alexander for who he is and not having all these expectations. You must be this. You must be right. Like this. You have to accept every single culture. I mean, Alexander's not full Klingon and, you know, and he should be embracing his mother's side and his humanity. And, you know, Worf just sees it so one way. And it's like, dude, this is a child. He's going to be his own person. So love him for who he is and not what you think he should be. Mm.
Oh, so Richard, I looked it up. Martok's ship is the Rotaran.
Rotaran, yes. Hey, I was close. It had an R.
You were. Got the R-O.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I watched a lot of the episodes where you see Worf and Alexander together in TNG. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say... Worf has his issues, but he's not as bad of a parent, I think, as a lot of people think, because I think there's a focus on certain scenes and certain moments. So as I was going through it, I think Worf and Alexander are together in something like 5 or 6 episodes of The Next Generation. So first it's in Reunion where Kalar is bringing Alexander aboard. Worf didn't know about it and all of that. And Worf has a lot of difficulty and it's like, why didn't you tell me? I'm not ready for this. All that kind of stuff. And he's kind of telling Alexander, like, this is what's honorable and this is what isn't. And he's kind of stern.
Why?
I know, he keeps asking why, right? But yeah, the kids do that. I asked why way too many times. But like, what's interesting about that episode is that, you know, Kalar's dying and Worf and Alexander are there. And he says to, you know, look and always remember what death looks like. Right. So they have that. But then what I think, to push back a little bit on the notion that he's not a very good father at all, at the end of it, Alexander asks, like, OK, so are you my father? And he's like, yes, I am your father. And they actually, you know, have a nice little embrace there. So there are moments where he is a little gentler to Alexander, actually showing him some physical affection. So I think if he was like the worst father in the world, he wouldn't do anything like that. And he would be really cold.
Yeah. And like what Richard brought up last week, where Worf goes in new ground and, you know, saves his son from the fire that's happening. Like, you know, that definitely shows he cares and he is learning, you know, what it means to be a father and a protector. So that's why I'd like to assume that Worf is doing the best he can. It's just,
well, let me continue in my case, in the case that I'm trying to make.
Yes.
Because like at the end of that episode, New Ground as well, like he saves him from the fire with this, you know, superhuman or super Klingon feat of strength, I guess you could say. And then like at the end, you know, he's saying that he thinks his mother would be pleased by him accepting the challenge of living on the ship. And again, they embrace and they seem to smile at each other a little bit. So there is kind of like this warmth and this softness to Worf in some of those moments that we don't see elsewhere. But also I think about something like ethics, which we had talked about in the last episode, where Worf is going through this, trying to think about like, should he do the ritual suicide? When it comes to the point, like Worf could very well have been, if he was trying to be like Mr. Super Klingon, have been like, I don't care if it's my son, but he does not do that because he knows that that would be something that Alexander would find a hard time understanding and that would be really traumatic for him. And at the end of that, also after he's gone through the surgery, he's had some difficulty earlier on, like he fell and he's like, Alexander has to go away, right? But at the end of the episode, even though he's fallen, he's like, Alexander, I could use your help here. And there's, I think, a really touching moment at the end of that episode where he's kind of holding him up and helping him go through that. It's weird that these all happen at the end of the episodes, but there are like these glimpses and these moments that tell me that there's something more there and that it's not just all about, you know, honor and sternness and being strict. And I mean, he definitely has his issues. He's not the best parent on this list for sure. But I think that there are things that you see where he's actually opening up to Alexander in ways that he does not open up to hardly anyone else. And so I think that, and there's, I know I've gone on for a while about this to try to make my case. But I want to give, you know, one more example, which is the episode of Fistful of Data's. A Fistful of Data's is basically about Worf getting some time off, Alexander wanting to have a fun adventure in the holodeck. They have a fun adventure, and at the end of it, Worf is basically like, yeah, let's do this again. This was great. I mean, how often do you see that where Worf is like, I had a great time, let's do that again? It's so against the stereotype of him. So I think Alexander does bring up some things in him that you don't see elsewhere, and that he does have elements of being a good father. It's just that his essential failure and his essential problem is that he doesn't understand that Alexander spent some time growing up with Kalar, who's half human and isn't very much into Klingon ways, and that he's part human himself and is in this difficult situation where he doesn't really feel as Klingon as trying to find his own identity. That's Worf's essential failure, not recognizing that Alexander has his own identity that he's trying to get to. But I think that he really is like trying in his way to open up in small ways in order to be a better father, right? But he's not the best for sure, but I don't think it's the worst he could possibly be. Because if it was the worst, he would like never give him words of encouragement, never have any softness or warmth toward him, never embrace him, never want to have fun on the holodeck with him. You know what I mean? Like it could be far worse. And I think he gets a really bad reputation where it's not that bad, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, end of my rant.
Compelling arguments, Justin. Very well said. Yeah, Worf is doing the best that he can.
I know, you just think the best he can isn't very good.
He could have done better.
But you know what, like, sorry to get personal again, but like there are, Worf is supposed to be like this, like stern, honorable Klingon, but there are these moments there where he is giving like support and encouragement and you know, having some kind of like warmth or understanding that I never got in my childhood from my father. Like, so if that's the standard I put it against, you know, I think that he's not doing as bad as it might seem. So anyway,
very good. Agreed.
I just had to get that out there because I've heard it so much, like Worf is the worst father. And I don't really think that's the case. Lots of problems, right. But yeah. Okay. And we'll see people in the Babel conference. We'll see what you think.
Yeah. Let us know.
So now that we've eaten up like half of the show with that.
I know, right?
Well, I think some of these, there isn't as much to go on. So another one that we should make sure to mention is Sergei Rozhenko, who is Worf's foster father. I think we already talked about him a little bit in the mother's section, because what Helena and Sergei are doing in the episode Family kind of goes hand in hand. Like Sergei is so proud of Worf and loves him so much, but Helena's like, okay, enough with the stories. You're embarrassing him a little bit. But I think it's really clear that he does love Worf.
He's the father that we want, but don't want everyone to see.
Like bursting with pride and embarrassing you, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, unconditional. Yeah, yeah. So proud of my son and just so happy. And, you know, and you can just see, and you know those parents, it's like, you know, spend time with me, be with me. It was funny when... Well, it's a mother story, but, you know, my mom and I, we sort of have this thing where it's like, I love you. And we sort of pat each other, you know, because it's like this uncontrollable need to be with each other. And I just get that from Sergei, just like, be with me. I love you. And so yeah. It's great.
Well, I like in that episode that, I mean, he is the one that says that they're so concerned about his discommendation. Like we heard about that and we wanted to know what was going on. I mean, he is... like in some ways the opposite of Kyle Riker, who like is just kind of absent. They isn't going to find out what's going on. Sergei's like, oh my goodness, we heard about this discommodation that happened not long ago. What's going on? How can we help you? You know?
Yeah.
So I think he seems to be a pretty good father and maybe one of the best ones on the list, at least from the small bits that we see.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. Any other thoughts or should we, is that all we have to say about
that?
No,
Sergei? That was it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about another one we don't see too much of, and that's Ian Troy, who is Deanna's father. We basically, you know, we hear about him, that he died when she was young, but we see like this image of him in Dark Page inside Loxana's mind. And I think we find out that it seems like Deanna has fondness for him. After all, you know, the episode The Child, she names her child after him, right? And she remembers being sung to sleep by him and all of that. So it seems like there's a certain, like, fondness for him. But, like, what sense do you guys get from the little that we know?
So I look at Ian Troy as a great father because he has a great relationship with Lwaxana. Like, you can see their love for each other and you can empathize with how much patience he has to have with Lwaxana and, you know, her love for him. And so that translates to him being a good father because they have a healthy, loving, you know, parent relationship between Lwaxana and Ian. So I see it as he is definitely a good father. And from what little we learn, singing her, you know, singing to Troy and, you know, loving her. And I like to see it as, you know, their love, Lwaxana and Ian's, therefore is going to make him a better parent and a better father.
I could see that. And also, I think in A Fistful of Datas, we find out that he told her stories of the ancient West, which she really liked. So, yes. Yeah, it seems like he's doing good things for her. What do you think, Richard?
I mean, there's not much to go off of. Yeah. I mean, I would hope he's a good father. I mean, lack thereof, you know, really don't hear about him. I mean, didn't they say that he also worshipped Lwaxana?
Yeah, I think that. Well, I think that's what Lwaxana says.
Yeah, I mean, whether that
does. That may be her perception of it.
But I mean, yeah. for someone to be like married to a Lwaxana and seem to be happy, I mean, I think you'd have to have a special personality for that.
Yeah, you gotta have to.
Well, moving along, another one we don't see too much of is Edward LaForge, who is Geordi's father. We just see him in a conversation that they have in the episode Interface. So it's like this ship, the Hera, is missing with Geordi's mother. He seems fairly accepting and calm about it. I don't know. He doesn't seem like too terribly broken up. And he's like, Geordi, it's, you know, it's lost. I'm really sorry, but going to have to accept it. So, and I don't know, I got this impression of him, like maybe he was a little bit distant, but what do you guys think of him, Amy?
Well, I think that was sort of written just to play off how dismissive and then to contrast that with Geordi's concern. So I'm not going to hold it against Edward LaForge, but I think it does show that they are in communication and it sort of seems like Geordi has a good relationship with his siblings and that's an okay family relationship there. So I'll give kudos to Edward for being a good father.
Okay. Although I think we find out that both he and Silva are in Starfleet and sometimes they're on different ships and different missions. So sometimes Geordi is with one of them and sometimes with the other, which could be difficult. But what do you think, Richard?
I know we don't
find out too much.
They all seem to be very calm people, I guess, into the in a very stressful situation, like, you know, the missing of his wife. But I mean, again, you can't really go off of anything really, except for, you know, oh yeah, he looks pretty calm.
That's about it. Well, yeah. They saved him from a fire, so that says something.
Or maybe they have experienced this before and that it turned out to be nothing. And maybe they think it's the same thing. I don't know.
But his father is already saying that they're planning the service for it. So I think they think it's gone. So, well, anyway, I think we've blazed through a couple of them, but I think we're going to talk a bit more about these next ones because, well, for one of them, I have to torture Richard. We're going to talk about Jack Crusher, Wesley's father.
Oh, God.
Now, we hear a lot about Jack Crusher starting even at the beginning that his father had died on a mission. He was part of the Stargazer. Picard had to deliver the news to them. So we hear a lot about him, but and we see him in a hologram and family and in a vision in Journey's End. Like, but I think what's interesting is that hologram in family that Wesley sees, it seems to say a lot about him because this is something Jack recorded when Wesley was less than a year old. And he's being so like open with him. He's saying like, I didn't know what to expect when I was being a father. I hope you don't resent me for being gone too much. It kind of comes with this uniform, but he's also telling me like, I can see in your face all of the people I've loved, your mother, my father, you know, all of our family. So it's this really like supportive message. So that seems to tell a lot about the kind of person that he was to me. But what do you think, Amy?
Yeah, I think Jack Crusher, again, shows this great intention of being a good father and understanding the risks of being in Starfleet and that he might end up being killed and is going to, you know, send this letter to, you know, his son. And
to be seen when he's like 18, right?
Yeah, you know, and what foresight and to have to do that. And just, you know, I don't know really anyone, any father that's done that in my personal life or any friends, you know. No. It just seems so awesome. And you see like, you know, at their first birthday and they'll take, you know, little video clips and this is, you know, and it's like the kid's 1 year old. What are you saying to the kid? But, you know, for the future, I think it shows great intent and definitely, you know, that he loves Wesley and, you know, I just, and again, his relationship with Beverly, showing that love there and Wesley is an expression of their love, I think is very beautiful.
Richard?
You sound like what I say to Jennifer, what giving a like a 2 year old a birthday card. Yeah. I'm like, she's not going to remember it.
So, yeah.
But like, yeah, no, yeah, definitely. Again, you know, not much to go off, but I mean, that message, yes, you're right. It does say a lot about who he was, that, you know, he wants to be understanding at the same time, you know, he wants to be there for him, but he's come to the grips of, you know, understanding that this job very well could take him away and keep him away for a long period of time, or in this case, death. And yeah, it sucks. Hopefully he, it's too bad he didn't make more of them. I mean, you know,
I think he intended to. But,
no, I know, but yeah. I'm saying, like, if he's like, I mean, when did he die? When Wesley was what? It wasn't like when he was 1 year old, because Wesley remembers Picard giving them the news, so he's a couple of years old. So I mean,
yeah, but I think what ended up happening, maybe this is more background from the novels, but he ended up, I think, being assigned to the Stargazer, and it's a very like long deep space mission, so I think he was gone for a couple years or something like that. Yeah, but I think he intended to do more of them. But I think, yeah, Wesley was probably at least a couple of years old. I can find out for sure. So he died in 2353, and Wesley would have been 5.
So yeah, he at least remembered something of his father, a glimpse of his father. I mean, really, I mean, I really think he's pretty, I would hope he's a good father. Based on that message, I guess that's all we really have to go off of. So
at least his intentions seem good, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's not one of those oops fathers.
Yes.
You mentioned that a couple times.
I know, right?
Well, let's move on to our last one, which I don't know, may be unexpected on our list. And that would be Gul Madred, who, of course, is the basically Cardassian torture of Picard in especially Chain of Command Part 2. And there is a scene where you see his daughter there, and Picard is really questioning how this works with Cardassian culture and what he's doing. I think there's a really interesting scene there. But like it also brings into focus like what we've been talking about has been basically about, you know, human or let's say Betazoid or Klingon parenting, and this is about Cardassian parenting, and they're a very different culture. Richard, what do you think about Gul Madred as a father?
His heart is in the right place, but the method is not. I mean, obviously, you know, the Cardassians are, is it a totalitarian sort of like society? Basically naturalistic, very naturalistic, and you know, it's us versus them sort of mentality, you know, against the Federation and basically any government that's out there. And it makes sense for that kind of mentality, if that's exactly what the government was. Whereas, you know, where the Federation is more about, you know, peace and I want to say hippies of the galaxy, but that's not appropriate.
I don't know. Would you call someone like Jellicoe a hippie? Yeah. In Starfleet?
Probably not. So definitely, you know, definitely more peaceful and loving is what I mean by that. It's definitely different parenting style. But I mean, to dehumanize someone and to make them lesser of you, I mean, yeah, I mean, obviously that's never a good thing. I mean, you would never want to do that to someone that you know, or someone, or another species, if we do run into another species anytime soon, that they're lesser of. But like, I mean, it's just, I see where he's coming from. I really do, especially when she leaves the room and he starts discussing, you know, the enemies of Cardassia. I mean, that would only mean if their plan is to be at war with everyone for a long period of time, and they're already hurting on resources as is on their own home planet. So,
well, but what he actually says is, you know, what would peace get us? Before the military took over, there were people that were starving, there was disease, you know, and there were all of these awful things, which I think it's an interesting choice for the writers to put that in, because you end up starting to think about it like, okay, from their perspective, the way that they're seeing it is that there's so much misery and suffering, and this is their way out of it, to care for their own people. And so they have to kind of think of others as less. And I think he even says that his daughter has learned, I think he says from the time she can crawl, that, you know, their enemies are kind of less than them and deserving of their fate. And that's kind of how they rationalize it in order to feed their people and to feel strong and all of that. So,
and I could see that, you know, being that the military basically solved all those problems. I could see it. I mean, and to be delusional about like that and everything. But I mean, it's just, I don't know. I mean, that's a different way of thinking of it, but I don't think it's right way of thinking of it either. So yeah. I don't know.
Your thoughts, Amy?
Well, Richard, you sort of changed my mind. So well done with that. I was going to say, yes, Golmadred is a great father, but then you bring up the point of, you know, teaching to dehumanize or to think of any other race culture as less than your own. Yes. Whatever the proper vocabulary is.
I guess from their perspective, it would be de-Cardassianize. I don't know.
Yeah. Exactly. And because, you know, I'm thinking you want your children to be better than you are. But then you continued your discussion in saying that, you know, Golmadred really believes that the military has made it better, and therefore that is his philosophy. And so he is going to do everything he can to, you know, teach his children that the military is good. We now are being fed and, you know, we have safety and we are strong. So with that, I'm going back and forth, actually. Like, I do believe that Golmadred is a very good father. He is teaching his daughter the ways of, you know, his job, what he is doing, giving her experiences, real life, hard truth experiences, but still in and under his care, under his control. Like, he's not shipping her off. He's not sending her out to the cold, hard world. He's introducing the cold, hard world to her in a controlled environment. And I see that as a good parent. Now, what that is saying to humans and Cardassia and culture, that aside, I think Golmadred is a good father for teaching his child that. I do always wonder, I'm like, well, why isn't this kid in school right now during the day? But that's neither here nor there.
I think it's a really interesting case, and this continues in Deep Space Nine, where you see the Cardassians are kind of brutal and militaristic and have done all of these horrible things to the Bajorans. But at the same time, even the worst of them seems to have love and affection for their children. And you see that here, where, you know, in the opening of the scene, there's this this pet that his daughter is caring for. And Golmadred makes sure to say, you know, like, make sure you pay attention. This animal doesn't have its mother anymore. It's dependent on you. in some ways, like, he cares more about this pet Wompat than Picard or than any human. And mm-hmm. the way that he thinks about it and explains it is, like, humans don't love their children the way we do. You know, they are less than us. They are the bad parents, I think, is what he's really saying. And I think from a Cardassian perspective, from what we can see, he is a good father. He seems to love his daughter and, you know, speak gently to her and not be too harsh toward her. But at the same time, he's doing these things that we feel like are wrong and evil, the way that he's torturing Picard. And Picard says that when children can devalue others, they can devalue anyone, including their parents, which is the point at which Golmadred mm-hmm. slaps him. Like, I can't believe you said that, because how could our children devalue their parents because we're doing such good for them? We're making sure they're fed. So I think it's a really complex thing. And it's, I think what I would say is, from a Cardassian perspective, definitely a good father. From a human perspective, definitely a bad father, because he's exposing her to torture and all of these terrible things that we think children shouldn't be exposed to or learn or devalue others. You know, I mean, it's just unthinkable in the Federation that you would teach your children, like, you know, these Cardassians don't love their children like we do. You know, they're inhuman, you know? So I think it's like yes and no, depending on the perspective. And I think that's what makes it really an interesting thing to see, and very different from the rest, how we're judging the rest of our list. Because even Worf, I think we have to judge from a certain human perspective, because he is on a starship where they're mostly humans and it's a human-founded culture, the Federation. I mean, yes, there's these other cultures, but a lot of it, I think, is influenced by human values.
Right.
So, anyway, very interesting to throw that one in there.
Yeah, I'm glad we got to talk about it, because, yeah, you're right. He's good and
bad.
Not
depending
good.
on the perspective. Yeah. And like that's the thing I think that Star Trek gets you to think about a lot, is that things that you might value or think are good or bad can be very different to a different culture. And that's true on Earth as well. I mean, in some countries,
yeah. And that's the point.
Yeah, this is something that's good. In other countries, it's bad, and vice versa. There's just such a diversity of opinion on a lot of these things. So,
yeah, because you're teaching and continuing this cycle of hatred, and mm-hmm.
so
that's not where we
want to
be.
The moral of the story is never. Judge a father by his cover.
By his culture.
Yeah, well, there you go. You do that too. And then cue the star. The more you know.
There you go.
All right, so let's talk about our final thoughts. Amy, your final thoughts on the fathers that we've talked about in The Next Generation.
Well, sort of comparing it with the mothers episode that we did last month, it seems to be more straightforward type of fathers that we see, compared to, like, if you remember from our mother's discussion, like, we were getting, you know, foster mothers and, you know, just sort of a lot of different types of mothers, where it seems like these are all traditional fathers. I mean, outside, well,
except for Data and Noonien and Sergei.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those two, you know, Android and, you know, Klingon, but it just sort of seems like it's a traditional father that we see. And I find that interesting. There's seems to be not so many fathers. Like, when I think about, oh, well, like, all the fathers are dead, you know, that sort of comes to mind. But I like that we do get to see what we do see, especially with the contrast of good, and again, quotes, good father versus a bad father, and how these men are taking on the roles, and how Star Trek is showing the various types of relationships that fathers have with their children.
Yeah, good points. Richard, your final thoughts?
So, in the light of Father's Day, I'll tell you guys a story that really warmed my heart about being a dad. And Eva's 8 right now. I think she was like 2 or 3. So I had a friend of mine come over here to my house, and one of the best compliments I have ever been given was, "You're a good dad." And he gave me, and at a time where I thought I was not a really good father because I didn't know exactly what she wanted, obviously because she's like two. She's talking back, screaming, and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, ugh, I can never win. And that's how I felt for, you know, in that time frame. Now it's a whole different story. She has a mind of her own.
Yes, she does. She's so cute.
And nothing wrong with that. Sometimes it doesn't. Yeah, I don't know. It was the one of the greatest compliments I've ever gotten. And, you know, it's in and I've read so many self-help books when it comes to being a father as well. And, you know, what I've learned is that being a father is not obviously a cookie cutter sort of thing, especially with each child, especially if you have multiple children. Being a father to one kid is different from another. And I've learned that quite a bit, thanks to Eva. And, you know, talking about the fathers of TNG, it just tells me that, you know, just like Worf, you know, there's no easy way to do this. I mean, if it was easy, then what's the point of actually doing it? You know, you learn a lot through yourself. You learn a lot about yourself, and I've learned a lot about myself as a father. You know, just like with Gold Madrid. I mean, it's based on your perspective. I mean, some people believe in tough love, some people don't, and some people go through those books and actually verbatim do them, which is not constructive to a child. For sure. I mean, I absolutely love this. I take my, as I would hope that any other father would, I take my fatherly duties very seriously. I absolutely love it. I would never give it up. So before I sign off on this one, I want to say happy Father's Day to everyone, and also to my dad, and also my grandfather, and everyone in my family. I don't want to miss anyone this time around because I took some flack with my grandmother, and somehow someone told her, and I don't know what the hell happened. So so I'm gonna say everyone in my family that's a father. happy Father's Day, and I wouldn't be the person if it wasn't for you guys.
Oh, excellent. Well, and thank you for what you do as a father, Richard. It's a very important responsibility.
It is, very much so. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just going to jump in because, you know, ever since knowing you, Richard, I've known you as a father because, you know, I've been introduced to Eva and I've had the wonderful opportunity of seeing you interact with her and knowing the sacrifices that you make for her. And putting her, you know, first in your life is truly remarkable. And I really do honor and respect all that you do for her and as a father and how you are building your family and just really, truly respect everything that you do as a father. So I'm thankful for you. Happy Father's Day.
Making him cry.
almost happy. They're starting to come up a little bit.
Yeah, and I guess one thing I wanted to say also before I really get into my final thoughts is, you know, I talked earlier in the episode that I've had a really tough relationship with my dad. I haven't talked to him for a little while now. But at the same time, I think I can recognize all of the work and sacrifices he made to make sure that we were fed and we had a roof over our head and all of that. And I do really very much appreciate that. So thank you to all of the fathers that do what's necessary for, you know, kids to be brought up. So like as far as thoughts on these fathers in the next generation, it's not an extensive list. And I don't think we necessarily like missed anybody because, you know, we hear a little bit about Picard's father, but not much. But I think for a lot of the characters, you do see or hear about their fathers, and they do seem to be very influential figures. I mean, in the case of like Data, you know, he is the reason for Lal's creation and sees her, you know, just about every moment of her lifetime, which is pretty extraordinary. And I think there are, you know, I mean, I think what it shows, like the mothers of TNG, is there are these different struggles with children, and they're, you know, oftentimes like really trying their best, and some do better than others, but it's such an important role. I think as, you know, important as mothers. I mean, it's just like, these are the, like, but however your family is structured, right? The people that are helping to take care of you when you are a child, whatever relationship they might have to you, are important and do have a huge influence on your life. And I think we see that in this list. And when we talked about the mothers of TNG, they're all having a big influence. Even when you talk about Gal Madred, just like that scene and that philosophy that he has will have a huge impact on the rest of her life in that case. So I think it's been really interesting to take a look at this. And it's, that's again, some interesting discussions and revelations about some of these characters. So I always love when we do that. All right, so preview of next week. Next week, Amy is unfortunately away, but we'll be having special guest Patrick Devlin with us, who's been on Earl Grey before, and we will be doing a commentary on the on the season 6 episode Suspicions. So be sure you take a look at that. You can watch along as you listen to the podcast, or if not, you can just listen to it. That's what I usually do, but I think we're going to enjoy talking about that episode next week. Well, it's been so fun talking about the fathers of the next generation, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, to the journey!
Do you have to have the stick to be the grand proxy?
The scepter?
Yeah. I see it as a walking stick.
Is that supposed to be the Grand Negus's scepter? Is that the actual one?
Oh my gosh.
Replica, of course, but is it supposed to be the actual one?
I don't know, but what it reminds me of totally is old Biff from Back to the Future, old Biff. Yes. With his cane that he hits people on the head with. That is totally it.
Hello! McFly!
Think, McFly.
Standard orbit.
People are coming over and they're introducing people to him, and it's my turn. And he goes, Steve, Jimmy, I want you to meet the host of the convention. This is Stephen Lance. And I go, pleased to meet you, sir. Nice to meet you, Mr. Dewan. And he goes, hi, Steve. Nice to meet you. And he's like, what? What? You mean you don't talk like that?
The 602 Club.
In particular, I noticed that the most with either Elastigirl or Violet, because it's sort of like you and I were talking about before the show, Helen, Elastigirl, really shows that she's Elastigirl not only in what she does as a superhero, but in showing the things that a regular mom has to deal with, you know, whether you're a single mom or, you know, a big family. It's something that traditionally they're trying to show that a parent goes through.
Warp 5.
Right, because Frankenstein himself, like, it doesn't really mistreat the monster, right? They've got him locked up, chained up and whatnot, right? Because they don't know what to do with him, I guess. Like, now that I've made this corpse, well, now what, right? Like yeah. You know, it's not like a puppy.
Never right? thinking like, about the end game. Just like all those, you know, master villains. It's like, yeah, you rule the world and then what?
Right.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all of these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. That helps others to find the show.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us, and we might read your email on the show. You can also find the network on Twitter at trekfm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. So, Richard, where can people contact you when you're not watching an Ambujutsu match?
Well, now that it's been Can we now bet on the matches now or something like that? Now that it's legal,
this is a future sport.
Sure, I'm in Vegas. You can bet on anything.
you can bet on an event that hasn't or a sport that hasn't been invented.
Yeah. Right. Well, you got, not advocating gambling. Well, anyway. I just lost my track. There we go. So you guys can find me on Facebook. I pop in here and there on the Babel conference talking trash about Mr. Was the Crusher. You guys can also find me on Twitter at XRansom. So Justin, where can people contact you when you're not constructing Android family members? Wow.
Uh-oh, my secret's out. Time traveling data gave me the secret. Well, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek. Currently tweeting out my Season 5 rewatch of The Next Generation. And you can also find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. So, Amy, where can people contact you when you're not studying the schematics and diagrams of the Enterprise-D at home, just like Sergei Rozhenko?
Well, you can find me here on the network. I host The Edge with Patrick Devlin. And that's our Star Trek Discovery podcast here on the network. You can find me on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, but my favorite place is on the Babel Conference. If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you can find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producers, Norman Lau, Justin Ozer, Michael Huter, and Thomas Appel. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and, of course, Earl Grey.
So join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
Great joy and gratitude.
Today is a good day to be a good father.
Things are only impossible until they're not.